First, it's been a big week for infrastructure. On Tuesday, a group of Republican and Democratic senators approved a bipartisan infrastructure package. And Democrats in the Senate approved an outline for their $3.5 trillion package that would fund things like free community college and childcare. It's the week in Washington. We'll talk about that and some big political news right here in Wisconsin. Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind announced yesterday he will not be running for re-election in Western Wisconsin's 3rd District, a seat he's held since 1997. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Representative Ron Kind's retirement? If you live in the 3rd Congressional District, what have you thought about his leadership over the last two decades? Are you looking forward to new congressional representation in that district? You're a close district in political terms, one of the few ones in the country. Are you going to looking forward to all the attention? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel White is WPR State Capitol Reporter. She joins us for a look at Kind's announcement. Laurel, welcome back.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a listen to some of what Representative Kind had to say about why he's retiring. Here he is at that press conference in La Crosse yesterday.
The truth is, I've run out of gas. At the end of this term, it'll be 26 years of running back and forth to Washington, D.C., of traveling around, in my humble opinion, the most beautiful congressional district in the nation, the 3rd Congressional District.
Can you talk a little more about what Representative Kind said about his decision not to run again?
Well, I think that was a big part of it, Rob. You know, he talked about how he's run out of gas. He talked about how, you know, it's a demanding job. He has kept his home base in La Crosse all this time. His family is there. So a lot of commuting back and forth between Washington and Wisconsin. But, you know, he also talked about kind of the type of politician that he's tried to be. He characterized himself, as he has for years, as a moderate. And when he spoke about that yesterday, he said that he believes he's part of a, quote, dying breed of public servants that kind of try to find compromise and bipartisan solutions for things. So though he didn't say it outright, you know, he said, I'm tired, I've run out of gas. He also kind of alluded to the fact that the political climate is different than it was when he first got into office.
This is Wisconsin's most competitive congressional district right now, arguably Wisconsin's only competitive congressional district right now. Can you remind us of the results we've seen there in the last couple few elections?
This is such an interesting district, Rob. I think political experts and watchers alike really enjoy kind of nerding out on this district, some of the choices that it's made over the years. So just to kind of give you a run of recent presidential elections in the 3rd District, Barack Obama won the district by 11 points in 2012. So pretty decisive victory for Obama then. But then President Trump went on to win the district in 2016 and again in 2020 by about 4 points in each of those elections. But of course, as President Trump won, in those elections, Ron Kind was still reelected as a Democratic congressperson. So we've certainly seen kind of the flip there and then the close divides where we've had people voting for Trump and Kind on the same ticket.
Laurel, it's been a pastime in Wisconsin whenever there's a need for a Democratic candidate for statewide office, governor or U.S. senator. Speculation about, is this going to be Ron Kind's year to do that on a statewide basis? And people are still wondering about that maybe for the Senate next year. But I don't know. If I was going to run for another office, I don't know if I'd start by saying I'm running out of gas.
Right. I think if he was going to do that, we probably would have gotten a little bit of a hint of that yesterday. You're absolutely right that I feel like every conversation that we have about Democratic candidates for a statewide office in Wisconsin before Ron Kind rules it out, and he usually doesn't quickly. Usually he says that he's thinking about it or hasn't ruled it out when folks ask him about this stuff. I think that's because he is from such an interesting district for Democrats. He comes from a part of the state that isn't considered kind of a progressive hotbed. You know, he's not from Madison. He's not from Milwaukee. He brings a different perspective for a statewide, you know, Democratic candidate. So that's been attractive to some folks. But obviously, he hasn't decided to do that up until this point. And it seems pretty unlikely for the future.
Laurel, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is WPR's state capitol reporter. She talked to us about Democrat Ron Kind's decision not to run for re-election in 2022. For more on the national impact of Kind's announcement and other top stories in Washington this week, we'll turn to Andy Duren. He covers Congress and American politics for The Wall Street Journal. Andy, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
Andy, this is big news. Ron Kind saying he's not running again. Big news in Wisconsin. Is it being treated as big news on the national scene as well?
It's definitely seen as in Washington as part of a trend of some Democrats, House Democrats in some of these competitive districts who are opting not to run for re-election ahead of the 2022 midterm. Just for context right now, Democrats in the House have an extraordinarily narrow margin. And given that this is a midterm election in the first midterm election of a Democratic president's term, usually historically, that first midterm election will go to the advantage of the opposition party, in this case, Republicans. So Democrats are very much bracing for a very difficult battle to hold on to their majority in the House in 2022. And some of these exits from folks like Ron Kind are in Washington interpreted as a signal that folks are not necessarily confident that they'll be able to win those races and that Democrats may not be able to keep the majority after next year. So that's kind of the context that it's playing out here in Washington. And it's part of kind of the broader, the broader battle for the control of the House of Representatives in 2022.
A lot of House seats, Andy, around the country are pretty safe for one party or the other. Do you expect to see a lot of money get thrown into something like Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district, given that we actually have seen close races in recent years?
I'm sure that district will be one of many that where both sides pour a lot of resources and time and effort into over the next several months. I mean, I think, part of it will depend on, who the Democratic candidate ultimately is and how competitive that person is seen as being against the Republican candidate and all sorts of, different factors that, national parties consider when they make these decisions about resource allocation. But, certainly it can be expected that, a district like that that's been, competitive in presidential races and in congressional races in the last few years will be one where, both parties gear up for a serious contest.
Talking to Andy Duren from The Wall Street Journal. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics, some of it here in Wisconsin this week. Moving on to infrastructure now, you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the Senate vote, giving the go-ahead to one of the two big infrastructure deals out there. Let us know what you think at 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to President Biden celebrating that Senate vote yesterday. Here's a listen to what he said at the White House after the vote.
After years and years of infrastructure week, we're on the cusp of an infrastructure decade that I truly believe will transform America.
Andy, can you talk about what happened yesterday in the Senate, why it's a big deal?
So yesterday, the Senate passed a roughly $1 trillion infrastructure bill that was the product of months of negotiations between a group of 10 senators, 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats, and then the White House. And as President Biden alluded to in his remarks there, this is a big deal for a couple of different reasons. I mean, one is obviously just kind of the policy accomplishment at the center of this. Infrastructure is something that, members of both parties have recognized, this is an area that Congress should tackle, that there's an underlying need to, pour a lot of money into roads, bridges, and, other things like water infrastructure and broadband internet. But then it's also a vindication for folks like President Biden and also moderate lawmakers in both parties that, bipartisan progress on major issues is something that's possible. It is something that can be accomplished. So for both of those reasons, yesterday was a big day in the Senate for the Republicans involved in this agreement, for the Democrats involved in it, and then also for the White House.
And as you pointed out in a tweet, both Senators Mitch McConnell and Bernie Sanders voted on the same side on this. What does that tell you about support for this thing?
Yeah, so this it did, you know, a big bipartisan agreement like this. It had all 50 Democrats, including, or all 50 members of the Democratic caucus, including Bernie Sanders. And then Mitch McConnell was one of the 19 Republicans who did vote in favor of this. And I think, you know, it highlights, you know, both the work that, you know, the folks did in negotiating this agreement, but also, you know, points to the fact that infrastructure is probably unique as an issue where there is kind of a general bipartisan support for addressing it. I mean, putting federal resources into, you know, dams and airports and things like that is something that's pretty comparatively straightforward on a policy level as opposed to healthcare taxes. And so it is a topic that is something that, you know, lawmakers of a lot of different stripes are find themselves more easily unifying around versus some of those more challenging policy areas.
We're picking up our look at the top stories in national politics. Andy Durin stays with us from the Wall Street Journal. We're going to stick with infrastructure now, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. If this thing passes and the money comes to Wisconsin, what would you want to see infrastructure spending go toward here in the state? What's at the top of your infrastructure agenda, if you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Andy, this thing passed the Senate. Now there's the House, and I understand there's some differences among Democrats, not so much whether they want to vote for it or not, but whether they're going to vote for it without a commitment for the Senate on the other infrastructure thing. What's going on?
Yes, that's right. The fate of the infrastructure bill in the House is intertwined with the fate of this other separate package that's focused on a whole range of issues. That's education, that's healthcare, that's climate change, that Democrats are also pushing for as part of advancing President Biden's agenda on Capitol Hill. So right now there's kind of a standoff where House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said that she will not bring up the infrastructure bill in the House until the Senate also passes that separate piece of legislation, which could cost as much as $3.5 trillion. And she's doing that because there's a pretty large group of progressives in the House who are nervous that without that assurance that the Senate would not move forward with that other set of priorities. And they want to basically hold the infrastructure bill hostage until they have proof or they have a result from the Senate. And they know that these other priorities will also be addressed this year. So as you can tell, there's a lot of different factors and a lot of kind of interlocking things here that have gone into what could be basically a months long wait until we actually see the infrastructure bill, which is not expected to change substantially in the House. But it still might not pass the House for a while Democrats figure out this whole other package, which, you know, involves a whole bunch of different complicated policy decisions and policy designs that they'll have to work out among themselves over the coming weeks and months.
All right. So some legislative table tennis here. Let's bounce back over to the Senate side. This Democrat only bigger, looser definition of infrastructure bill. What's going on with that on the Senate side of things now?
So the Senate has formally started the process of writing that bill. Like you mentioned, this is a piece of legislation that Democrats are expecting and are planning on passing without any Republican support. And so to do that, they have to use a kind of special legislative procedure that requires a little bit more preparation and time. So they've formally begun that process, and now they will actually sit down and try and write some of the specifics of this legislation. And so that is figuring out exactly, you know, how long to, you know, extend an expanded child tax credit that has started going out into bank accounts for many Americans. How long to design some of these healthcare programs and these exchange subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, or extending or expanding Medicare to cover dental, hearing, and vision care. So there's just a lot of, you know, big policy questions they have to tackle. You know, I haven't even mentioned, you know, they're trying to raise taxes on corporations and change how capital gains are taxed, and a whole bunch of different questions that they now have to kind of sit down and kind of try and put pen to paper and write out solutions that will get the support of all 50 Democrats in the Senate. And that is no easy task. It's something that, you know, just earlier today, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said was going to be pretty difficult, and they're expecting this to be a hard, you know, legislative process, just given the breadth and the depth of the issues that they want to tackle. And so that will be, you know, kind of the next phase there in the Senate.
We are talking to Andy Duren from the Wall Street Journal. He covers Congress and American politics there. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. You can weigh in with your thoughts on infrastructure. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Looks like a little glitch on the phone line there. So send us an email with your thoughts quickly. Ideas@WPR.org is the place to send that to us. Andy, with the more likely smaller infrastructure bill, I understand there was a Votorama, I don't know how people pronounce it, in the Senate yesterday. I'm guessing that was way less exciting than the word sounds. What is that?
So overnight last night, the Senate had a Votorama, and this was actually a Votorama that led up to the passage of kind of the budget blueprint for the $3.5 trillion broader Democrat only bill. And so that was because of this special process Democrats are using. They have to do this this Votorama because there's no limit on the number of amendments that Republicans or lawmakers of both parties can offer as part of that process. And so what that ends up producing is primarily members of the opposition party put out a bunch of different amendments on issues that they think will kind of trap or put the other party in a difficult position. In the form that took last night, that was Republicans offering amendments on, you know, things related to taxes, on things related to abortion, places where they wanted to try and put Democrats in a tough spot or split Democrats. It's important to keep in mind, though, that these amendment votes on the Votorama that happened yesterday and earlier today, they are for the most part meaningless in terms of policy consequences. These are amendments that are often written in a way to a document that is just a budget resolution, such that even when they're passed, they do not have the force of law or any, you know, consequences in terms of public policy. But they can highlight some kind of interesting political divisions, in this case among Democrats, and maybe give some hints at where some of these policy debates will go in the future. But for the most part, it's a relic of kind of just the strange rules that the Senate uses and that Democrats are using to try and pass legislation with a simple majority rather than the typical 60 vote majority that you need to overcome a filibuster in the Senate.
Andy, as I mentioned earlier, nobody's spiking the football on either infrastructure deal yet. There's still some work to do before they get done. And I won't ask you to predict the future, but what is the sense in Congress of whether either or both of these is actually going to get passed?
I think right now there is, my expectation would be that eventually we will see this the infrastructure bill, largely as it was approved in the Senate, become law, and that there will be some sort of additional package of Democratic priorities that also eventually works its way through both chambers of Congress. I think, you know, there could be it's reasonable to expect that there will be changes to what exactly Democrats are looking at now. I mean, you've already had some folks like Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia just this morning. He's a Democrat. He said that $3.5 trillion was too much money and that he was uncomfortable with spending that much money. And so there might be some changes to the overall size of the package and, you know, what some of the policy provisions that are in there might have to come out for various reasons. But I think right now Democrats see this as, basically their primary opportunity to enact policy changes on, you know, a whole laundry list of party priorities while they control the government. And, you know, they're looking at the 2022 midterms and they see that, you know, it's possible or, you know, history would suggest that they will probably lose control of the House. And so this is really their window to make progress on a whole lot of issues that folks in the party have wanted to make progress on for a decade, you know, going back to the last time that Democrats controlled the White House, House and Senate. And so I think it's unlikely that, you know, they won't be able to figure out a way to do something on some of those issues. I think, you know, total failure is a pretty unlikely outcome. Just if I were, you know, putting probabilities in all of this, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't think they'll just, you know, pack up and go home and not pass anything on all of these issues that they have worked on for literally a decade.
And Andy, as we wrap up, that's infrastructure, a big story right now. What do you have your eyes on in other stories over the next week or two?
You know, really, it's going to be, you know, my world really does revolve around these two big policy issues. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, just what some of the jockeying is among the various, you know, parties, you know, the various wings of the Democratic Party on these issues in the next few weeks. And if we do start to see, you know, some of these specific policy issues develop with more specificity. But, you know, August, especially on a non-election year like we are right now in Washington, you know, August is considered a kind of slow month. So it will be kind of a slow boil for a while on these issues and a whole lot of other, I think, you know, a lot of folks in Washington are ready for that after the sprint we've all been through the last few weeks. But those will be the main things that I continue to keep my eye on.
Andy, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Andy Duren. He covers Congress and American politics for the Wall Street Journal. He was with us today for our weekly look at the top stories in national news.